Welcome to NextUS 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African-American community. I am your host, Jock J.C. The inaugural season of NextUS 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion, the only all-female African-American battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September the 7th of 2022 to learn about the background of the 6888 Battalion. Tonight, we celebrate the one-year anniversary of NextUS 818 Podcast. In episode 24, we interview a group of 6888 descendants who recently journeyed to Scotland, England, and France to walk in the shoes of their ancestors.
Welcome all. In episode 22, we recap the June 2023 Legacy Tour. Tonight, we have a personal and in-depth conversation about the significance of the tour to some of the descendants who engaged this journey. I'd like to start by asking different people to introduce yourself, your 6888 ancestor, and your relationship to the ancestor. We'll start with Sheila.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sheila Kearney, and I'm calling in from Milford, Connecticut. Actually, the home of my aunt, who was a 6888 member. I am the niece of who was then Captain Mary F. Kearney, and she was a commanding officer during the 6888 deployment. And as I just recently found out, she was chief of mail during that deployment. So I'm very happy to join all of you. The tour was great.
Welcome, Sheila. Mm-hmm. Cynthia?
And good evening again. My name is Cynthia Scott, and I'm the daughter of PFC Elizabeth Bernice Barker Johnson. Which she was in the 6888 from 1943 to 1946. And I'm happy to be here tonight.
Thank you. Janice?
I'm Janice Martin. I'm the daughter of Indiana Private, Indiana Hunt Martin. I just want to say I just really enjoyed this trip. It has just been, it's been great.
Thanks, Janice. Jerry?
Jerry Marshall, and I am the son of Private Odessa Taylor Marshall, who was one of those brave, bold, black, and beautiful women of the 6888.
Okay. Karen and Courtney. Karen, you want to start first?
I'm Dr. Karen Jordan, and I'm calling from Mount Laurel, New Jersey.
And you are the daughter of?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't tell you who I was. But I am the daughter, the second daughter of Private First Class Annie B. Knight Jordan.
Thank you, Karen. Courtney?
Hi, everybody. Dr. Courtney Jordan Cox here, granddaughter of PFC Annie B. Knight Jordan. And the thing I enjoyed the most about the trip was getting to meet all of this extended family. So the folks who are here on this podcast tonight, as well as the folks who are not here, other family members and advocates. It was a really wonderful opportunity to connect with such strong, powerful folks.
Thanks, Courtney. Tramika?
Hello, everyone. I am Tramika Massey, and I am the granddaughter of First Private Class Hester Givens Massey. So amazing. My first cousin and I, Kyra Massey Kennedy, attended the tour, and I'm definitely here representing, and like everyone else, I'm so excited that I got to meet my extended family. So happy to be here.
Thanks, Trey. Roger?
Hello, everyone from Lenexa, Kansas, which is a suburb of Kansas City, for those of you who have never been here before. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Roger Murphy Matthews, Lieutenant Colonel, retired U.S. Army, and I am the son and one of five children of Vashti Murphy Matthews, and I thoroughly enjoyed the tour and seeing what our great ladies and mothers and grandmothers did, and looking forward to having discussions with all of you.
Thanks, Roger. Sandra?
Hi, everyone. I'm Sandra Frazier Dean, and my mother, Sergeant Virginia M. Lane, was part of the 6888. I am so glad I had the opportunity to go on this trip and meet all of you.
Welcome. And last but not least, Dre.
Hey, my name is Andre. You guys know me. I am the I'm in the gym. A lot's going on around me right now. Sorry. I'm the grandson of Private Indiana Hunt Martin. I'm calling in from Los Angeles, California, and I had a great time on the trip. It was definitely one of the highlights of my life, man. It was dope. You know what I'm saying? So I had a good time.
Thank you, Dre. So this was, as you all know, this was an inaugural trip. It was a curated trip just for descendants and advocates of the 6888. You never know when you start on these ventures whether they're going to work out, whether enough people will be interested, and what people might gain from them. So I guess my first question for you is, for each of you, is what compelled you to go on the 6888 tour? And at the outset, what did you hope to learn and understand? We'll talk later about what you actually got from the trip. But you know, when you decided to make this investment of time, love, and money, what compelled you to do that? And what did you hope to gain from that? Dre, we'll start with you.
So when I went on this trip, the first thing, or the main thing I wanted to get, was the exact path that the 6888 took. Because you hear the different places, but when you actually go, I feel like, you know, all of the places just stick more. So I can basically like spit out exactly where they went, in what order, like it's the back of my hand now. So I feel like that's the main reason why I wanted to go, was to see the exact path that they took.
Okay. Sandra?
Okay. So I am the family historian. And my older brother has been sending me all of my mother's documentation and all of her records. And when I saw this trip coming up, I thought, oh, this is a great opportunity for me to walk in her footsteps, actually feel her presence. She talks somewhat about being in the 6888. I know she attended every one of the reunions they had. So I have, you know, those brochures and all of her bags that she got from every single one of them. And I just felt that it would be a good opportunity for me to walk in her footsteps and then share with my siblings how and where she went. So there was no way I was going to miss out on this trip.
And Roger?
Well, a little self-deprecating for me, because spending 25 years in the Army and spending 3 years living in Europe, I never went to any of the places that the 6888 was. So I kind of, you know, what was I thinking all the time I was over there? So when it first came up and I saw that it was going to Glasgow and Birmingham and London, which I'd never been to, but I must say that even seeing where they went there, which was obviously key for all of us and for me, seeing the whole picture, going down to Normandy and seeing where they came, where our soldiers, sailors, and airmen came ashore, and that whole piece of it kind of tied it all back for me. And so that's what kind of drew me to do it. When I first saw the tour, I thought, well, maybe I'll do it. I mean, I lived over in Europe for 3 years. I really don't need to do this. But then when I saw the Normandy piece come in, I said, oh, well, then I've got to go now, because I didn't do it before. And it kind of closed the loop for me, because like many of you, my mother never talked about it. And so it was interesting to see where they went, what they did, the living conditions that they had. And I was fortunate enough, and my mother wrote those articles for the Afro-American newspaper to give some of her feelings. And that's probably the only piece that we have from her directly, because with the five, my brothers and sisters, she never talked about it.
So I hope that now most of the Most of y'all only tonight have been on the podcast before with the individual stories. Roger and Sandra, I'm looking forward to getting you on in the future as well. So, Shamika, let's see, we had your family story on episode 11. So what compelled you to make this journey?
Well, yeah, you know, she was my grandma Hess. So I, it was just a little blurb on the obituary for Kyra and I. And so for me, it was like, I'm grabbing for straws to get to know this, these secrets of this woman. So I wanted to find out what the secrets were behind to help me. I mean, I wanted to make my grandma make sense in many ways, always did. And so I thought this would be an opportunity for me to learn more about the making of her. And so it was really cool when I knew, you know, she was like 18, 19 years old, and I have a daughter that's graduating. That was graduating, I'm gonna be graduating the same time. So it was like, wow, okay, let me, this should be really interesting. So, and it definitely proved to be that.
And you also had that other connection of your parents meeting.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, whenever just much like Roger, like whenever we were gonna go through Normandy, like it was like, okay, this is actually, can we find out? Like, will I get a feeling of where they met in France, how this whole thing happened, because clearly had they not both been there, I would be in some other form. I wouldn't be the Massey that I am. So yeah, that was definitely the piece that I thought about afterwards, like, hold up, wait, it's not just about her here. I'll have this opportunity to get close to him. I don't think I embraced that fully until we really got there. But yeah, it definitely was a awesome thing.
Okay. Courtney, we heard your family story in episode 9. What compelled you to make this journey?
I am a counselor and an educator and so many more things. But one of the things that is important to me in those roles and all the other roles that I carry and will carry throughout life is to be able to piece together enough things to tell a story. To be able to have something to hand off. I thought when I was planning on going on the trip, I thought about the interactions that I have on a regular basis with young people who need help and inspiration and guidance, and they're trying to develop their character. And so for me, it was really about, similar to Tramika, piecing things together and understanding this complicated human that was my grandmother, but also maintaining pieces of the story and having a personal connection so that I can tell this story to young people that I work with now, to my children, to my grandchildren. I didn't feel like I had enough information yet before going.
Okay, thank you. Karen?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, my family had been harassing me about going to Europe, so I never really had any reason to go. And when this came up, I said, oh, I have a reason to go now. But my mother did talk about her experiences, and she has a lot of pictures when she was in the military. So I wanted to see what I know what I was like in my early 20s when I went off to college far away from home, and how I was seeking adventure and how I was fearless. And I just wanted to feel what to go and see what it was like to be a young woman over there and having these experiences that she both talked about and had pictures of.
Thank you. Jerry, we discussed your family story in episode 7. So what compelled you to make this journey?
Well, I often think about that proverb, if you want to know the end, look at the beginning. And my mother was my beginning, right? So for me, I was like Roger. She didn't talk much about the war, but we always in the family got glimpses of things, right? She would say this little story, but they never really connected. And, you know, as the children, that's mom's story, right? So when I think the thing that really struck me is when all of a sudden I understood that they got a Congressional Gold Medal. And I said, these women got a Congressional Gold Medal? Who are these phenomenal women that the country would recognize them like that, right? So, and then it dawned on me that my mother was part of this. So when the legacy tour came up, It says, I get the opportunity to go see where these extraordinary women were. And at such young ages, I mean, my mother was like 19 years old. And so for me to step to follow in the footsteps of where she went, it was a no-brainer situation. I don't care if I was going to find by hook or crook, I was going on this trip just so that I could experience what my mother went through.
Thank you, Jerry. Janice, I see we heard your mom's story in episode 5. And so what made you want to make this journey?
Well, my mom, in the last few years, started talking more and more about it. And I had just thought, well, wouldn't it be great to take her? But she had too many medical problems. So I said, boy, she always talked about going to Paris, what it was like in the building that they lived in and how they had to sleep. And I said, wow, I wonder if those buildings are still there. Mm-hmm. And when this came up, I said, I didn't care. I was going to find money to go. I didn't care if I had to borrow it. I was going on this trip. I didn't even, when they start saying what, I said, I don't care, I'm going. But I just really wanted to see for myself and feel, get an idea of what these women went through during that time period, or to even try to embrace what happened. Because she did talk about it and she did believe it was a very rewarding experience. So I wanted to go and I was going to go.
Thanks, Janice. Cynthia, we talked about your mom in episode 3.
Yes. Yeah, mine was really, first and foremost, I think, to fulfill a promise that I had made to my mother. Back in 2018 or 2019, I can't remember which, we were contacted from the BBC. They wanted her to come to England. And she wanted to go, but I, because of her health, I was just too afraid to take her that far away from home for fear that if something happened, you know, I just didn't want to be that far away. So I told her one day, I said, she kept telling me, she said, I want you to go see where I stayed. I want you to go see where I worked. And I think deep down, really, she wanted to go back to see where she stayed, where she worked. She wanted to see if it was the same, I'm sure, and that, which, of course, we know it wasn't. So I told her, I said, you know, I said, there will be another time that we'll get to go. And I knew that it, she probably would never get to go. But when this, I heard about this and this came up, I'm like everybody else. I didn't care how I got there, you know, how, you know, I just knew I had to get the money to go. And I wanted to make good on the promise that I made her, that there would be another time that we would go. So no, physically she was not with me, but as Janice, I believe it was, said the night that we had our dinner, the first night dinner, you know, she said, you know, their DNA is in us. So really and truly, she was there with me, maybe not physically, but she was there with me. But I wanted to fulfill that promise to her. And I too wanted to see, you know, what she really had not talked about, because she really didn't say a whole lot about being in the military. So I wanted to see what it was that she, you know, what it was that she did while she was there.
And Janice, you shared something, took some part of your mom with you.
I did. I did. I had brought some of the ashes, and in little spots, I would put a few little grains here and there, letting her know I did get her back there.
That's special. And last but not least,
that was
Sheila. We talked about your aunt in episode 2. So
you know, hearing all of you, I get so emotional every time I talk to you. And for me, the trip was meaningful. But the trip was meaningful. It was inspiring. It was emotional. I felt so much love. And then for my aunt, I felt so much love and respect for her, for what she accomplished. And it was a bonding experience to all of you who attended, but also to the greater group of us who are in our presence, and for those who we are going to find, because we have, so many more families that we have to identify. Why did I take the trip? Tour was a must for me. It was a requirement. I've been to places in England and France before, but this particular equation on behalf of 6888 to England and France made it something I had to do. Previously, with this whole World War II experience, my focus was always on my dad, because he was one of the first members of the Integrated Combat Infantry who volunteered to become a member of the combat group, the fighting forces. And now after the trip, I do have the connections that I believe my father started off as a member of the Red Ball Express. I'm waiting on verification of that, but again, my focus was always on him. He was able to get a Bronze Star for his bravery during World War II because he was part of the 12th Armored 17th D Mystery Division Unit. But then I heard about the signing of the Congressional Gold Medal. So my focus has now expanded to Mary, his sister, older sister, who never really talked about the war. We, of course, I knew she was in it, but she never said what she did and what it was like. I got all those pieces from her siblings. From there, also getting validation from all of you, and then, of course, other resources. It's starting to all come together. But part of our interview today, I just want to say how happy I am to have met all of you. And I hope we can kind of move this forward, because I think we have a lot of important discoveries to make together. So I just want to thank you for being part of my new family.
Thanks, Sheila.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sheila.
So we had quite an experience. We were in Glasgow, Birmingham, Stratford-upon-Avon, Bletchley Park, London, Normandy area, Rouen, and Paris. I think I got everything in. So I'm going to open this up. What are the fondest memories and highlights? Anyone can get started.
Can I give one?
Yes.
My favorite memory is watching Tremika connect with every single site we went to. I don't know, Tremika, if you knew that you were being seen. I wasn't like watching intently for you, nothing creepy like that. Everywhere we would go, I would watch you physically make contact with different places, whether it's holding a rock or putting your hand in the sand or touching a wall. And as a person who didn't really know what to expect from the trip, I think that watching you do that made me think about the intentionality of using this time to connect, to hear, and to hear in lots of different ways. I have a few favorite memories, but one of my favorites is Tremika's interactions with the spaces that we visited and her intent to connect.
Mika, I don't know if you want to.
I had no idea, but that's when you said pick a moment, like it was, there were just so many. And I think that's what it was for me. I would just get to certain places and the tears would start flowing. And then I would just feel drawn to certain things. And, you know, simple things like the ground, like how old does this ground look? How old is this pole? It had to have been here. What's the date on this wall? How old is this building? And this tree, I wish this tree could talk to me. If you could, what would you say? Like, that was just the most amazing thing for me going through it, just knowing that it was only space and time that was really separating us from that. All that was just endless for me. And the Utah beach was definitely a whole moment that I had. I just was drawn to get away from the crowd. And I don't know anything about what happened at Utah beach. And I didn't even know what happened. I just knew that was where my grandfather landed. Next thing you know, I find myself off there. And you
almost got left. No.
No, that was at the next beach, okay. But that's another fond memory for another time. But yes, I just and then Dre noticed that I was gone, that I walked off and was taking a picture, and I was writing a message to my grandfather on the sand as they were doing the race. I don't even know what they were racing, the
ridge.
I don't Yeah, they had the carriages out there, and so it was like this whole thing that was going on. And so I was writing it out there, and Dre caught me and got this amazing picture, because remember it was like raining, or it was a cloud, it was really cloudy. And Dre was like, wow, there's like this sun popped out. And so I saw the sun. He said, the next thing you know, I looked and I was like, wait, who's that over there in the distance? And so he took a picture of the sun, then he took a picture of me, the little pebble over there. And then later on, we looked at the picture, and it was like this heart or angel wings that were on the picture, that literally it was like right in alignment with me. And so I was literally having a moment, and I recorded it, and completely impromptu, did not plan to do any of that. And for that to be happening, it was just like, to me, I felt like that was my grandfather come back. I never met my grandfather. My dad, he was shot at a poker game when my dad was about 10 to 12 years old. And so he never really got to spend that time with him. So I really felt like in that moment, it was like, grandpa, we're here. 'Cause, my dad and Kyra's dad were war babies. He was in the military. He only came home and he made a baby, and he had a baby to live on. So he never really got to spend that time with his family, and he didn't come back with his family. And I think that's now understanding what he went through in Normandy. I understand more about why he may not have done that. So I felt like in that moment, it was just like alignment and healing for probably everyone. And so yeah, that those were that was a big one for me.
That was, yeah.
Derek?
For me, it was, and I appreciate that, because when I saw the picture and I saw the heart, I'm really emotionally and spiritually connected. And so for me, the trip was fantastic, all of it. But there were two moments that just stood out to me, and that was at the King Edward School. For some reason, when I got at that school, I was just overwhelmed spiritually. Something just moved me, which I know that was my mom that was speaking to me. I was, my body was hot. I was sweating. It wasn't that hot, and I had chill bumps all over me. So I just knew mom was there and she was with me. And she was urging me to say something, right? And I'm saying, oh, this isn't my. But I had to, and you all know, I got up and I said something, because I said what I was authentically feeling at that moment. And then, afterwards, I said, ooh, that wasn't the most appropriate thing to say, because it wasn't, but for me, it was my place and my time. And the fact that it was on a campus, a school campus now, right? And I am, I'm a former educator. So for me, the opportunity to talk and interact with the students who came was just beautiful. And I know my mother would have said, if you didn't do anything, you talk to those students, right? So that was the beauty. And the second part was, I think the first part really prepared me for the second part. And that was at the wreath laying ceremony. I mean, to me, that's when my mom just came through me and she said, boy, you do your thing. You do your thing right now, because you're honoring those three women and all 865. And we were a very special group. Right, because we're probably the first largest group to ever come over there of descendants to honor those three women and the 855 women that was there. So trip was great, but those were my two highlighted moments.
Okay, who'd like to go next?
I'll go. I think too it was the King Edward School, and just because I have the book by Brenda Moore where my mother was interviewed in that book, and one of the pictures in there was when she was making waste paper baskets. And so when we were there, I felt her presence. I mean, literally, it just felt like she was standing right where I was standing. And I just kind of went into a silence and just felt like she was saying, now you're here. Now you know. So I think that to me was the hardest part. And then as we started to walk down the down to the where the plaque is. And at that moment, I think that that's when Oprah from the BBC had asked to interview myself and my niece, Danielle. I could barely get the words out to speak to her because I was still feeling my mother's presence from within the school. So that to me was the highlight. And just one other thing, as I was listening to Tramika, I don't talk about my dad because this is about my mom, but my mom met my dad over there in Paris. So not in Paris, but in Rouen. So that's a whole nother story for another time, but it's rather interesting when they talked about how when the women came over, the men were standing at that gate, and all I could picture was my dad, Mr. Cool, standing there, you know, sweeping my mom off her feet, because I mean, number one, she's from Minnesota, so that says a lot. And so she was probably just overwhelmed. So, but overall, I think that was the biggest moment for me.
Okay. I'll go next. I think as you know, the others, I think the King Edward School, was my, most emotional point. And I think it was at the time when we were, after we left the show that Helen had done, I thought was absolutely fantastic. Walking down there, and then I think when Gary said he wanted us to be quiet, you know, he wanted us to be silent as we walked out, you know, along the street to line up. And that's when it really hit me, because I felt like, you know, and I felt my mother's presence there very much so. When we walked out and we were quiet, and you know, it was like I wanted to find a specific spot to stand in, because in the spot that I stood in, I felt like, okay, this is where she was. And I could hear her in my mind talking to me while I was standing there, you know, telling me how, you know, they had to stand at attention. You couldn't move. You just had to be eyes straight ahead. And standing there, because I look back at some of the pictures that I'd seen, you know, I am just so focused looking straight ahead. And that was when I had my moment of just utter shaking, crying type, you know, going on. But I just felt her presence there so strongly. I know she was there with me, you know, during that time, that, you know, when we were there. But another thing I thought about, I don't know if anybody else noticed it. I know when we would get off the bus or walk as a group, again, as those ladies did back then, when they walked out, it was like a, you know, people turned to look at them. Some of them absolutely stopped and looked at them. And I noticed while we were there at certain areas where we were, when we would get off the bus, when we were walking in a group, people literally stopped and looked at us. We walked by one group that was, people were eating lunch or whatever outside, and they just stopped eating. And what ran through my mind, I said, this must be exactly, or probably more, I mean, for them more so, how they felt when they would walk as a group. People would just stop and stare and watch them. And it just kind of hit me. I thought the same thing that happened with them is happening with us. So they made people turn heads when they were over there, and we made people turn heads when we were over there.
But and we didn't have no uniforms on.
Thank you. So you can imagine the magnitude when they were out in their uniforms, in step, looking
majestic.
You know, just majestic. Thank you. You can imagine how they look. And I just thought the same thing. It just hit me. I thought, this is exactly how people were looking those many years ago at them as they were walking by. So that kind of hit me. It kind of made me feel good too. I thought, we're showing, our presence are here. I'm sure they were all wondering why we were there, just like they were wondering why our mothers, aunts, grandmothers were there as well.
You just want to share?
Cynthia.
Yes, I will. It's interesting. I have to agree with Cynthia and others. The King Edward School kind of brought it home, kind of for a different reason for me. Several of the documentaries that I saw, there are pictures of my mother sitting there sorting mail. And I'm assuming, and nobody can convince me otherwise, that that's where that was happening, right there at King Edward School, when she was actually sitting at a desk and actually sorting mail. One little difference for my family is my father was in the Navy in World War II in the South Pacific. And they met before she deployed to Europe. And so my mother was married when she was a part of the 6888, which is kind of interesting that she would, she would go there and he would go to the South Pacific and then come back together afterwards. So it, because my oldest brother was born in 46. So, life is good. But the King Edward School kind of did it for me. The other piece for me was relating how the whole Normandy piece led into that. I mean, none of this would have happened if the whole Normandy thing did. It's like when we got to Utah Beach and Omaha Beach, I'm going, oh my goodness. I've seen, as a retired Army officer, and I went to Command General Staff College, and I had to learn all the military history. And now I'm standing here going, oh, this is where it happened? That's the hill they had to get up? This is where the Germans were shooting at them? Okay, I get it now. It kind of brought it all to home. And then what our mothers and grandmothers and aunts had to do to keep the morale up for those soldiers that did what they did during D-Day. So that's what kind of did it for me.
Okay. Let's see. Karen?
Yeah, I'll go next.
Oh, okay, I'll go. Trey, go ahead.
All right. So two things. So two highlights of the trip to me were, number one, Gary, man. Gary, got a lot of respect for him, man. Gary.
It's Gary Stewart. I want to make sure the audience knows who we're talking about. So go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. Yes, Gary Stewart in Birmingham. So when we first met him in Birmingham, I'm not sure if you guys got a chance to talk to him in the beginning, but I believe he served in Desert Storm, and he was I think he worked with the mail. So that's what tied him into 6888. So that was his connection. And you could tell, he's all in with 6888, So even that night when we were going out and walking around in Birmingham, he was like, he had this pure excitement. And then, there was kind of this feel like he was walking us around and there's going to be a moment where he said, okay, stop, you know where you're at, And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we're here at the iconic, place where they took that one photo or when they did this. So and just the wealth of knowledge he had and everything, man. So Gary was definitely a highlight on the trip.
I'm gonna get him on the podcast also. He and I've already talked, so
nice. And then the second highlight is kind of you guys, I'm just gonna say it. The second highlight was the way Klaus was working magic with that bus. the way he was
I have talked about that with everybody. I've been here on the golf course. You got to meet this bus driver. My goodness. Did he maneuver that thing or not?
Yes.
And he was so cool, so calm with it. And I think we were in, what was it, Paris? Or we were in Normandy. I forgot where we were. But we couldn't make a left turn at a light. And the one French dude got out the car. Came down the bus like he was gonna get on the bus, and Klaus was just cool.
Was in Bayou.
Yeah, that was in Bayou. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was just watching him work that magic on them streets, because my mom was sitting right behind me, and she's like, "How is he gonna do this, man?" She's like, "I don't know if he's gonna do it." And I'm like, "I don't know either."
Andre, take it one step further. Remember now, he had to drive the bus in England. On the left side.
That's right. That's right.
And he got to France. He had to drive it on the right side.
Yeah.
And he negotiated both of those with no. I couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
he negotiated both of those with no trouble.
Right, and didn't even touch a sidewalk, like on the bus stayed in the street. So, well, that was like definitely a like a minor like highlight, something that was very very entertaining.
Let's see, who do we have?
Can I give a second highlight in addition to my experience of Tremeka? So, in the spirit of like being talked to during this experience, I think my moment was probably in Birmingham, right before we went to Bletchley Park. We checked into the hotel in Birmingham, very nice hotel, and they had a little coffee bar, coffee station in each room, which, you know, we saw throughout the trip at each hotel. But when I checked in, my eyes were immediately drawn to the mug that was sitting right in front. And the mug in our room had Morse code on it. And I was sitting there thinking, this is a little odd. So I started asking around. I said, does everybody else have a mug with Morse code? Because the other mug had some comic strip about British history. And I was like, these two things seem odd together. Everybody else had British history, royalty mugs. And I had this Morse code mug. And I said, it's just an interesting moment. And then when we went to Bletchley Park and learned more about the code breakers and the types of activities that took place there and the secrecy of the activities that took place there, the emphasis, I kind of wandered off and learned a little bit extra without listening to the tour guide. But there was so much emphasis on keeping military secrets and keeping these things quiet. There were a lot of things in reference to that. And so I just thought it was interesting that my grandmother was quietly kind of nudging me. I'm still trying to figure out towards what, maybe to pay attention or to tune in here or to connect here. I'm not sure. But this was a different type of nudging because I'm used to her like loudly nudge. So I have to sit with nudging might not be the word, but I have to kind of sit with this experience still and figure out what was she trying to help me connect with. During that trip, or what is the result of that?
Courtney, did you get that mug?
Of course I did. Of course I did.
Okay. Tell the secrets. That's what she's trying to say. Tell your secrets. I asked the mug, girl.
I said, you know, this mug has some special significance to me. And the guy just kind of looked at me like, yeah. And I said, I just want to let you know I'm going to be commandeering the mug. How much will it be? And he said, well, I'm not sure we can do that. I said, I'm doing it. Do I owe you anything? He said, I'll get back to you. I said, okay.
Too late.
I have the mug. It's in my suitcase.
Were you able to decipher what the Morse code says?
It tells you what each letter means. Like it has, okay. It's like an alphabet of Morse code on the.
You, Courtney, you might, for the audience, you might want to make a quick connection between that and your grandmother.
Yeah, I didn't say she was a code breaker.
Not in this.
No.
Okay. Well, I said it in my own mind. So the connection there was that my grandmother was a code breaker. In addition to the responsibilities that were present for the rest of the battalion, she was a code breaker. And so the Morse code was actually something, one of the few things that she mentioned to me about her service. And at the time when she mentioned it, I was like, oh, okay, all right. I had no clue what significance that had. I didn't really know what Morse code was when she was talking to me about it. And so there it was, plain as day. And it came up twice, once in the hotel room, and that same mug was on sale. It was the first thing I saw in the gift shop in Bletchley Park. Of course, Grandma, I have the free version from the hotel. But
he said, you better recognize I'm trying to communicate with you, even through Morse code.
That was
beautiful.
Right.
That was beautiful.
Now you have to go learn Morse code. Let's see.
The secret is out.
I didn't share mine. Two things. One thing that really struck me was, of course, the ceremony at the cemetery. Because as I stood there, I thought, these were three women. I actually have a picture of one of the women, Barlow. She actually sang. I have a picture of her sitting at the piano. She was, I guess, in one of the choruses or whatever. But And I was looking at that, and I was looking at the three women that died. And I said, you know, but for the grace of God, that could have been any one of our mothers. Now, of course, mm-hmm. we wouldn't be here, but it could have been any one of our mothers. So I felt a very special connection. Plus, those ladies didn't have anybody. We are their descendants. Mm. I don't think any of them had children. So we were their children. And I felt like that we were here as their representatives, as their descendants. The second thing that really impressed me was, I think some people didn't do this, but when we went to the hotels in Paris, I remember I've read several of the books about the 6888. And they talk about going to Paris and staying in a hotel and eating hotel food. And as we took a picture of the hotel they stayed in, I thought, oh my God, these young ladies came out this hotel every day and they saw this beautiful park across the street. And oh my God, I mean, they left that school where they were taking showers and cold showers outside. And then they were in Paris at this hotel. And when I went to George the Fifth or George Sink, where Charity Adams had a meeting with one of her superiors, I had to take a picture of the dining room, because here I'm thinking, this is the 1940s. This is a young Black woman from South Carolina, and she is going in this fabulous building, meeting these white men to talk about her assignment there. And I just stood there just imagining what that must have felt like for her. So those were the two things that got to me the most.
Thank you for sharing. That was beautiful.
Let's see. Did we get everybody?
Nope.
Janice, there you go. Yeah.
When we were in Rouen and they were doing the performance outside, they were playing the songs that we had a question about. I really look at the sky. I'm really a sky gazer. My girlfriend, when we go driving, she'll say, "Will you stop looking at the clouds and drive if you're going to drive?" But when I looked up, when the music was playing, there was only one Black bird up there. Then as the song kept going, it was like five. And eventually it was about 20 birds up there. And I'm saying, oh my goodness. And then as soon as the song stopped, they were all gone. I said, now what in the world is going on here? But it was amazing to just watch them come in one at a time and then just disappear all at one moment. And that was right after we went to the building that they were at in Rouen there. And I said, I'm wondering if the ladies wanted to see what we were up to today. They came to check out things.
Wow.
But it was like every place there was that we went to that they were at, it was like you could feel that they were there still. So, you know, even going in that building, I said, it was a weird feeling because it was like you weren't alone. Mm-hmm. And I just said, wow, because my mother had talked about having to sleep on these, when they got to France, the bed that they had made for them, the mattresses were full of bed bugs and stuff. So they had to take it out and burn it, and they only could sleep on their blankets until they got better, till the mattresses arrived. But she said it was a mess. They had to clean it. And I'm just looking around. And then when it was the shades were drawn, I said, my goodness, this is probably how it was when it was blackout. The shades were drawn. I said, so it was almost like it was set up for us. So that was what I really felt. I said, oh my goodness. It was just, I mean, a real emotional time, a real connection there. You could almost feel them there. I said, whoa, I don't know. But yeah, that was my moment.
Thank you, Janice. Sheila?
I was going to say something about that building, Janice. I walked over there and started looking, because now it's like one of those rework places where they have all of the different, they have, you know, a lot of different businesses that are compartmentalized above all of that. And I went over and looked at the lockers and the names. A lot of those were all like communication, IT. It was really catchy, creative, and all of these things with all of these people kind of think taking system kind of stuff. Yeah. And I was like, you know, like down in that basement, like I felt like they just set up a whole
communications
spirit
network.
And communication yeah. network that these people have no idea what they're tapping in whenever they're getting these messages. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
If those halls could talk and those polls, right. I was like, I know all of these places are doing well and coming up with some stuff because, I mean, they were setting up these excellent systems and executing and, you know, so that was an amazing place to be in there and to see how they're just still living on. And it brought those pictures to life because that building still looks like what it looks like, yeah. even the pieces that are left that's there. So that was an awesome one for me too.
Okay. Sheila, did you get to yeah. weigh in on, do you want to weigh in on this question before we move to the next one?
Of special places.
The fondest highlights and memories, a couple of the fondest highlights and memories of the tour.
And I would say Birmingham was really exceptional. I just really loved the ambiance of the community. Gary was exceptional. And we got a chance to see where the 6888 first kind of did their thing. And obviously they did it very well. I would say one of the other meaningful places was Paris. I know how much Paris meant to my aunt. She was really a major fan of it because of the Harlem Renaissance and a lot of the artists who went to Paris because they had a chance to feel more appreciated. She was really, really into that. So that had a special meaning to me as well. And then, of course, as she was the last commanding officer to bring everybody back, I know she brought everybody back dancing and happy. That's what I would say would be great.
So okay, I will weigh in. For me, it was the adventure to walk in, to see my mother very much enjoyed her time. And she talked about the adventure. So I wanted to kind of see, what was that like for her? Starting at the very beginning, that's why going to Scotland was important. Starting at the very beginning to see when the ship docked there, these young women on a strange land during wartime. To see the beginning and then the end part being Paris. My mother's time in France was so influential that that's what she talked about the most, actually. And she named all of her, you see, her daughters all have French names as a consequence of that. I'm an Antoinette in the middle, of Therese for Karen. We had a baby sister who died as an infant. She's Mignon. I've been to Paris several times before, but being able to go looking at it not as the typical tourist, but as the descendant of someone in the 6888 was a different kind of experience. So, I mean, there are lots of other highlights, but those are a couple that stand out for me.
You know, and I'm going to add that majored in French. She was so impressed with it, she majored in French.
These women's lives. My brother's middle name is Winston, named after Winston Churchill, because my mother really fancied Winston Churchill. Right, so they took a lot back from their experiences.
Yes. Also, we had someone else join us, Kyra. We're talking. How you doing? Calling in from Georgia. What we were talking about is the fondest highlights and memories of the tour. Did you have anything you wanted to share?
I'm not sure where you all left off. I'm not sure if the getting scammed at the Louvre was my most memorable part, having to pay $60.
I was going to bring that up. I was about to bring that up.
Okay. Are there any memories related to the 6888?
Fond memories.
Fond memories.
Not tragic ones.
That's why I said fond memories.
Not trauma experiences.
let's see. Fond memories. I think the room where those poles were, that were the original architecture for what the ladies were working in the mailroom, that was really, really, really impressive to me. That even though they made it like a co-working space, they did not touch the structure in that room. And I think that was just really awesome. The other thing was King Edward's tree. I think that tree was there since 1930s. So, you know, our mothers and grandmothers all were around that tree back then. So those two things kind of right now stand out to me, the tree and the architecture and the place where the mailroom was.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad you could join us also. So now I want to go back, at the very beginning.
I left off two things. Sorry, I wanted to say two things.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry, I wanted to jump in. Yeah, when we ran into Shalimar at the rest stop, that was a highlight. And then the second thing was the prestige of the Lord Mayorship, you know, just seeing how the whole Lord Mayors get down, how the first time we interacted with them, and just that whole experience was just real funny. I think the first time we were in the chambers with the Lord Mayor of Birmingham, that to me was definitely a highlight.
Two chains. and I know two one chains. Secret.
I just had to do that.
Yes, because since we're all in secret, one thing for me, it's awesome having Dre and Courtney here. Our last night when we had to leave in like 2 hours to be ready to get on the plane, Dre motivating us to go out and hang out after everybody went to sleep in Paris. And I think we made it to that pub, and it was almost like we could feel like after they had done everything that they found a time to go and have fun somewhere and squeeze it in, because you know the calendar and the timing probably was tight and all of that. But in that moment when we were just up there having a good time, dancing, and all this French is being spoken, and it's just us in there. It was amazing. It was like, okay, this is what it felt like for them to be having a good time, and people coming over talking in French, thinking that we knew French, and then later apologizing when they realized we didn't know what they were saying. so it was a fun time, and you know, us all becoming cousins, aunties, and to each other, aunties and uncles. I felt like on the way back, and even still, I when I talk to people about it, it's like, I went on a family reunion. That's what I did. I went to a family reunion. So the residual is the fondest memory of everybody. Like, and of course my cousin who's on here, Kyra. So, you know, it was like old time in grandma's house. So it was fun.
It was a combination.
Trey, you used the word motivated. Dre motivated us to go out. I think that was strong motivation. You know, pushing it to the limit. Maybe that. I think that's what we. That's what we
do. But you made the analogy of being like a family reunion, but it's also like a combination of family reunion and Thanksgiving dinner with the relatives you don't see all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. A cousin's giving.
Right.
Overseas.
You didn't invite last year, and now you should have done that. So, yes. So. I kind of thought about that time. I said, you know, there are only 22 of us, and we had at least 48 personalities. And I said, just think though, 855 women
right.
together.
Oh, all right.
You know, that's pretty incredible.
Ooh. That was the feat. That was the feat.
Yes. Being able to work together despite their disparate backgrounds and beliefs and get the job done in record time. So
you know, it makes you really respect Charity Adams, man. I don't know how she kept all those ladies together. She's an awesome woman.
I think there was also the fact that they were all in the military, right? And there's a strict rule of command that you have to follow. And they were young, right? These were young women trying to figure things out. So just part of being part of an organization that's structured and you are learning kind of kept them together.
Yeah. Now, one of the things my mom.
Now, none of y'all was young when we went to this trip when you got 48 personalities and 22 people. So it was two different situations here.
Well, you know, they had 1,600 personalities. You know,
yeah.
May I interrupt for a minute? But I just wanted to say thank you to everyone. And for those of our friends that we met abroad, I'd like to acknowledge all the women who were leaders of their communities. You had the mayor of Stratford, you had the mayor of Rouen, and of course, the mayor of Birmingham, who he himself was an exceptional person.
There was one thing that my mom had said about that whole situation. She said, our main goal was to make charity look good. Mm-hmm. Mm. She said, we were going to do everything in our power to make her look good because she was such a wonderful person.
I don't know how many of you have served besides me and Edna, but I will tell you that is a tenet of being in the military. One of the things you do as a soldier, airman, anything else is you make the boss. If the boss looks good, we all look good. And in my career, in my 25 years, we always made sure that the boss looked good. Now, there were some times we had some bosses that we preferred not look good. But we still have to look out for the overall unit. And we have to make sure that if the boss looks good, the unit looks good, we all look good. And I was able to reap that when I got to be in command, because I commanded two battalions in the Army in my career. So I understand both sides of it. But those ladies going to make sure that charity looked good for a myriad of other reasons, other than the fact that they were in a situation that was just beyond anybody's comprehension. Mm-hmm. And so they had to make sure that she looked good, even though, you know, they didn't really need to do a whole lot for her. I mean, she clearly was a quality person, strong leader, and knew what needed to be done. And then she got the support of those 855 ladies, plus those other officers like Sheila's aunt, to make that happen. So my point is, you know, that's a military tenet. You want to make sure the boss looks good. Boss looks good, we all look good. And they were going to make sure that happened and get the mission done at the same time.
The outset, I ask you, what compelled you to go on the tour? So now my question is, so you were seeking something. Phrase it whichever way you want. You were seeking something. What one or two things that you learned, gained, understood, or now appreciate as a consequence of this experience?
I'll go first. The first thing I thought of going to the Glasgow piece is the fact that they had to get on a ship in New York, get across the Atlantic with U-boats and all of that still active, even though the war was winding down, but the U-boats were still out there. So they were in considerable danger getting from New York to Glasgow. So I wanted to see that piece of it, we flew over it, but they had to get into Glasgow and then work their way down into France and all of that. But the danger was still there. Those ladies, all 800, you know, and even though we now know going to Glasgow that they came in pieces, they didn't all come at the same time, which is what I originally thought, that they all came together. Well, they didn't. You know, we learned while we were there that there was one group that came and then another group that came after them. But they were all still subject to that same danger getting across the Atlantic with the U-boats and all of that. And that was pretty telling for me. When I talked to my kids and others about, you know, what went on there, you know, well, the war was winding down. Yeah, it was winding down, but it wasn't over.
Yeah.
people were still getting sunk. People were still dying for several months after the 6888 did the miraculous things that they did.
Anyone else want to weigh in on that? You were seeking something. What did you learn?
Well, for me, I had no expectation, but I do think things did hit me. And some things that kind of stood out that I learned is more in the educational area. When they sang the song, and then when Trey Gayup got up and she sang the Negro National Anthem, they were giving us something and we were giving them something. And so I thought, you know, those things like, wow, okay, this is an exchange. When Janice was actually sprinkling those ashes, that stood out to me because I know we went over there and we took something from them, but she reminded me that we should also leave something there too, right? So that kind of stood out to me. And then the one thing that really hit me was, you know, I said, who are these Windrush people? But, you know, they're all Black. So I said, it's cool. But to hear their story and then to see that story and how it parallels African Americans and American building America and they're building England. It was like, you know, I just said it was just amazing to me to hear how Africans who've gotten out the diaspora have been treated the same way no matter where they are. Right? So that was something that also stood out with me. So, you know, no expectations, but those things of giving back and learning something was something I took away with.
I'm gonna go next, I guess. I was trying to figure out what made this short little lady leave Jersey and go to a whole nother country that she has no idea where she's going, and where exactly did she go? Because she never talked about this. So when I'm going through these different countries, I'm like, she did all of this. She can tell me about what happened at church. She can tell me about what happened on the soap opera. She can tell me not to have a pager because she thought I was going to deal drugs because I had a pager. She can tell me all that. But she didn't tell me she went through all these wonderful places and took these pictures and did something so phenomenal and never even speak about it. And the other thing that I was seeking out was to figure out where my grandmother and grandfather actually met. And it seems the meeting point was most likely Normandy because she was a nurse and he was bringing over injured people. So I was trying to figure that out because without them meeting there, me, Tremika, my dad, her dad wouldn't be here. So those are two things that I was kind of excited because I'm sitting here preparing to go on this trip. I'm like, my grandmother never said anything about going out of the country for anything. So I just was really excited just to kind of go through her footsteps and see she did all of this and didn't say anything, this wonderful experience. So those are two things that I was trying to get answers with. And so, yeah, so I'm pleased about what I found and enjoyed the trip. So,
okay. Anyone else want to weigh in on that?
Y'all go.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So I just want to make sure. So what I wanted to get out of it, maybe it may seem kind of basic, but it was just basic geography and knowing like where I'm at. Because before I went, never went to Europe. I never went to Europe, and I didn't realize that Europe was so small. Like I didn't realize that Europe is only like a little bigger than Texas. And then before I went on the trip, if you told me to point out where Scotland was, I probably would struggle doing it. But now it's like I know exactly where it is. And when I actually went on the trip, I kind of feel like the world got a little smaller, you know, because like now it's like I know, like I've been there, you know. So if anything, it's also, I think, encouraging me to want to travel more because, you know, that's only one other continent, right? So there's more work to do, I think, you know. But that's what I got out of it, is just an appreciation for geography and then knowing exactly where my grandmother went. Like I can like recite those places by heart, you know, and I should be able to do that, you know. So that's what I got out of it.
I think for me it was a few steps. I, you know, it's like a seek, then learn and understand, and then the final was to embrace what I had learned. So, you know, I wanted to seek out exactly what it was that, you know, my mother had done while she was over there, learn about it, understand what, you know, try to understand what she went through, the other ladies went through, you know, during their time over there. And then just to embrace, you know, just embrace everything that I had learned, you know, about what they had done, because it was, you know, it was, that was a big deal. So I'm just embracing everything that, that I was able to do, able to learn. I've got the materials here that I can go back and read, the pictures I can go back and look at. So I'm just embracing the moment that, you know, I did get to go over there and to, you know, to walk in her footsteps, you know, just for a little while.
Anyone else?
If I can real quick, because I want to say this before I forget, Natasha and Edna have already written articles to be published. They'll be in the Afro next week. Okay. So if you go to afro.com, you'll see the articles that they wrote about our trip.
Oh, it's been in Rwandan Arabic, French. The BBC article is in different languages.
But the one for the Afro will be in. But we'll publish it next week. Don't know.
One of the things that I got out of the whole thing, I didn't really go there seeking anything special. I wasn't looking for any kind of feeling or any kind of connection. But it was sort of the experience of reading a book versus watching the movie. So I had read so much about the 6888 from the different books that are written. And of course, my mother wrote her little autobiography before she died. So I felt like, okay, I've read the book. Now let's see what the movie is like. And that's what I kind of felt like I had. You know how you feel like a completeness when you see the movie and read the book, then all the parts come together. So that's what I kind of left there with. Like, okay, I've seen the book, I've read the books and seen the movies. So now I got it all together.
Anyone else?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I left with an appreciation that there is no excuse for any of us to ever think that anything is impossible. Period. Like all self-doubt, I think, was washed away. All of us kind of had, as we shared stories about our loved ones and how they were, like they all had a certain connection, spirit, and nature about them. And they pushed all of that into all of us and just meeting everybody and seeing where everybody is in their lives and everything that they're doing. Like, you know, their DNA, as you said, you know, that was so profound, you know, that we brought it there. But just seeing it with all of us, like, it carries on. And because they respected Charity Adams, right? They're now getting the Congressional Medal even afterwards, and it's going to continue to go on. So I just so much appreciation and just so much wanting to just like shout it out to everyone forever. And, you know, they were there. There were so many going through all of those the war rooms and going into all of those museums. We know that African Americans were there being excellent in the sky, in the water, in the mailroom, on the beaches. Like, they were the first ones there setting that stuff up under, you know, and they were doing the things that a lot of people didn't want to do, or where they didn't want to have certain casualties. Like, they placed us there and we did well, and all of us live because they did well, right? So all of that, it just brought all of that home to me, just how amazing we are as a people and how amazing we are as a 6888 family. And I just have a greater appreciation. My uncle was in Red Bull, the Red Ball Express. And so, like you said, all of these offshoots that we have, and they were just as wonderful and amazing too. It's like, you just want to shout their names. Like, I just came back, like, I just got to talk about it. I got to tell it. I got to, you know, it's just this pulling to feel the message, because I kept feeling my grandmother telling me, like, you know, finish our business, like, finish it, finish the business. And I think that, you know, I took away, grabbed the banner and continue to tell the story, continue to be great, continue to plant your seed. And one day someone, the things that you're doing that you're taking for granted that you're doing, someone's going to walk back behind you and try to put together your pieces when you were just doing you, right? So that's what I took.
And that's a good segue to a question I have for all of us. And that is, what is our commitment? Okay, so we are all educators, no matter what our field, whatever field we're in, career field, or if we're retired, we're all educators. What's our commitment to taking these newfound discoveries and understandings and spreading this to others, particularly the youth, to inspire them? Because they're facing a lot of challenges, many of them. Some of our children, perhaps less than others, but we have a responsibility. So I'm wondering, what is the commitment that each of us has to spreading these stories and using them as a foundation?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm already trying to figure it out, Roger. I have not forgotten about it. I'm trying to get smarter about it. I think now, anytime I read anything after being immersed in it, I think that there's value in taking someone through the steps of just history And I think that that forever changes you. And so I really do feel like, you know, I want to bring my children, I want to bring more children to walk through. If I can't bring them to Europe, then I can bring them through what they did here to prepare to get there, right? So I just think that those things, I have a greater appreciation for getting there to Kansas, right? And just walking these steps and doing it. And so I just think that if we can find a way, history, if we don't learn from it, it's just gonna repeat itself and do what it just did, right? So I just think that helping people know that, you know, there was things that got you here, there will be things that will happen as a result of you being here. So what are you gonna do with your time here? And maybe that will make, you know, a difference. So I just think that we all just speak out and grab the ones that are closest to us and start the ripple. And I'm planning to find a way to do it. I don't think I cannot do it now. It's a part of me.
Exactly. You know,
it's a exactly. part of me. I can't, everybody, like I'm still wearing my wristband. So I'm talking to people. Anytime anyone's asking me about it, you know, I have my Nextus 818 podcast, 6888 Legacy Tour 2023 wristband, rubber wristband with me. And so I feel like I carry them and carry their message with me. And so, you know, I want to go to the libraries and talk about it. I'm trying to read the articles and find the pictures and, you know, really get people engaged into learning about the things that have happened before and how people did hard things. And you can do hard things too. Like, just, you know, it's just amazing when you think about it. And so I think that all of us, I don't think we can't not talk about it, not do it. And The other piece that I think is key, that we have to be the ones to do it, because we went overseas and we were the delegation and people are writing articles about us. People are giving streets to Charity Adams. People are doing all those things for us and recognizing us overseas. Yet again, we're in this country having to make our own message, having to lobby for all of these things and do all of those things. So we have to do it. We have to go. We have to speak. We have to bring the message. And so, you know, I think it's a call to action for all of us. And I think we're all going at the next family reunion talk about what we did to answer the call as the Windrush. We coming on a Windrush now.
Well, let me follow up with that first. Okay. You all can call Edna and William. I think his name is William. They have the Richard Allen Museum up in Leavenworth, Kansas. And I told her I would go up there and visit when we got back. I went up there last Thursday. I went up there and took a tour of the museum, and it's fantastic. If you ever get a chance to come out here to Leavenworth, where their museum is a whole 2-3 minutes from where the 6888 monument is on Fort Leavenworth. What Trey was talking about, when we did the monument, when the monument was dedicated, my daughter and her daughter came up from Dallas to go to that. My son was there too, but my granddaughter was, you know, why is this important? Why am I here? You know, cares, you know how she at the time she was 17, you know, it ain't about me, why am I here doing something for somebody else, you know, kind of a thing. But then when she sat through that ceremony where they dedicated that monument, and Senator Moran did a fantastic job, even though I disagree with just about everything he says politically, but what he said at that dedication for the 6888, and six of the ladies were there, was fair. And so then the kind of, I watched my granddaughter and the light kind of went on. Like, okay, well, this is pretty damn important. I probably ought to pay attention to this for the future. So, you know, first thing, two steps for me. First thing, you got to make sure our own family understands exactly what happened here and how important it is. And then we're using the paper as best we can to get the word out, you know, to everybody else, on what went on, what they did, how important it was, and how we need to ensure that what they did is not forgotten.
Well, I just want to let you all know that on August 28th, my mom finally gets her post office. They're going to the federal, the postal marshal Post office marshal took it away from Higgins' office, Congressman Higgins' office, because he was going to do it. And he said he's no longer in charge. The post office master, he wants to do it. So they're having the event on the 28th of August where they're renaming the post office in her honor.
Beautiful.
You need pictures?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Checking the calendar pictures. Now.
Again, this is another way of educating others. You know, we need to spread this word. It'd be nice if they live stream it. It'd be nice to live stream it so others who can't come, particularly on a Monday, would be accessible.
That would be nice.
Tamika and I talked about if we couldn't do this full trip again, that maybe next summer we can maybe bring our younger children to Leavenworth to see Edna's museum and to see the monument. I mean, that wouldn't be as costly as what it was for this trip. And I think that's an awesome trip to do, to get the kids to see the monument, see that our mother's grandmother's name on that monument, and then go over to Edna's museum and experience that for next summer. So Trinka and I was talking about that maybe for something to do next year.
So just for the sake of the listening audience, what's the actual name of the museum? I know we've been talking.
It's the Richard Allen Cultural Museum.
Thank you. I know we've been talking to each other like we at that family dinner, but.
I think.
I have audience in Bangladesh. That's how far reaching this podcast. All right,
well, let me
not that they're going to come, but.
I don't want
to. I think that's
The Richard. It's the Richard Allen Cultural Center and Museum. And it's in Leavenworth, Kansas. The monument is not in Leavenworth, Kansas. The monument is on Fort Leavenworth, Kansas.
Okay.
So you'd have to go through security to get on the base to get to where the monument is. You just have to show your driver's license. Get on the base. And if you go in the main gate of the gate of the base and you go down between a half and a quarter mile on the right inside the main gate, and that's where the Buffalo Soldiers Park is. And you'll see all the other monuments for Colin Powell. And
so as we move to wrap up tonight, any closing reflections or words of wisdom that you have for our podcast listeners?
Can I go back? Because I was going to just real quickly, and I apologize. I'm actually talking about getting the word out. There's a gentleman that I met back in 2019 when my mother did her graduation thing. He lives in St. Lucia. He has got, his dad was a World War II pilot. And he has a project going called the Logbook Project. And he has sent his father's logbook around the world. I think it's been around the world like 8 times. He told me it's like 297,000 miles it's been. But anyway, my mother got to sign it, the logbook, along with Miss Garcia, I believe. Mm-hmm. He got him in touch with her.
Right.
But anyway, he is going to be, he has been following what's been going on with my mother and everything, and we stay in touch. But anyway, he is going to start a podcast himself. And after he saw the pictures and things, that few pictures that I had posted online where, you know, we had gone to UK, he starting his podcast. And I think I'm going to actually, he's wanting me to be on there to tell about that. And he's going to be reaching there's a lot of people that he's been in contact with, especially with his logbook project. So it's just been a fantastic, but anyway, I'm going to be on there, I believe, with him, talking to him. So that's going to be reaching some more audiences, about the 6888 to get their name out there as well. So I'm excited about that, but he does have a Facebook page called the Logbook Project. If you're interested in maybe going and looking at that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Karen, you want to tell him about your podcast that you did? Are you still with us, darling?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't
hear the first part. Tell them about your podcast.
Oh, yeah. Last week I did a episode of my podcast where I just recanted the whole, my whole experience and all the photos I took and everything. It's called Tripping with Theo Bold. It's on YouTube and also on Spotify. I haven't put it on Spotify just yet, or that episode's not on Spotify. So if you want to give it a listen and chime in and add comments, feel free to.
What's the name of it again? Tripping, would you say?
Tripping with Theo Bold.
Episode 88. I thought that that was that was amazing. Wow. The timing of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. And Kyra and I, so I'm a singer-songwriter, and I have these soul session chats with my fans. And so Kyra and I came in. Dre was on Friday. We came in on Sunday and did a podcast and was sharing pictures. And I definitely, you know, linked them out to Dre's piece as well. And I know Dre's being a little humble about it, but, you know, it was about 2 hours of really speaking from the heart and reflecting on things. And with Kyra, we were going for about 2 hours talking to about that, to kind of just spreading a message through. So I think that's going to be the lifeline and the communication. That's just really talking about it, and people can feel the emotion and be connected and feel like they were there, and be vested in doing their own research and doing their pieces. So yeah, I think we're all being secret squirrels out here. Where's the Morse code cup out here doing stuff? Well, and you know, even Carmen not trying to talk about what she's doing and, you know, all of these things, but it's you know, it's touching people, and I think it's all gonna be beautiful.
I grew up on Secret Squirrel, but I'll give my closing thought by saying birds sing not because they have answers, because they have songs. And I think each and every one of us are birds that have the songs of the 6AAA. Whether you have a podcast, a story, a soul session, a lecture, you just tell your story. And from that, things will emerge. And for you, just watch how things emerge. Because if each and every one of us just do our piece, just do your piece, something is going to emerge.
Absolutely. Did anyone else have any closing comments, or did you going to let Jerry have the last word?
I still want to remind everybody that part of this, you know, with Tyler Perry and his movie, it's a jump start for us, because people will get excited once that movie comes out and then start telling your stories over again. So just prepare, because they're making the way for you to be able to tell your stories.
That's true. Any other closing reflections? Not then. I'm going to thank each of you, Cynthia, Janice, Karen, Courtney, Dre, Jerry, Kyra, Roger, and Trey, for joining me tonight. I really appreciate the time you spent. I've enjoyed seeing my extended family again, and we'll have to figure out when the next reunion is stateside. When the first stateside reunion will take place.
Yeah. It should be the women's memorial at Fort Gregg Adams.
Oh, in January?
Whenever they get that one set up for the women's, for the 6AAA room.
Mm-hmm.
At the women's
that, or when they officially dedicate the Congressional gold medal,
the museum will probably be open. The museum will be open
before then.
Yes.
Well, when they finally cast and distribute the gold medal, that's probably going to be the biggest event.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sound like the friendship train to me.
Right. That's it.
Get on board. Get on board.
Get on board. Get on board. Roger, we coming. We coming.
All right.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Nexus 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nexus818podcast@gmail.com. That's NEXTUS 818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight I'll share a quote from Fred Rogers about embarking on new journeys. Often when you think you're at the end of something, you're at the beginning of something else. See you for our next show on September the 6th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Spotify for Podcasters.